Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. Thank you for joining your hosts, Adam Hunter and Corinne Lewis, to talk about the video game industry and, you know, probably other stuff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Building 72. We're so happy to be here with you. And we is me, Corinne Lewis, and Adam Hunter. You could say hi, Adam.
Hi. No, I was going for like just a visual thing.
I mean, this is a podcast. It's supposed to
be. All right, that's fair.
I think most people listen to it.
All right, that's fair.
And we're joined with, as I always say, one of my favorite people that have come through the EAE program. This is Jingwei Dong. Jingwei, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Jingwei Dong. I'm a game UI engineer and currently working in Infinity World. And I joined the game industry since 2015 after graduation from Entertainment Arts and Engineering as a member of Cohort 4, but also famous for as C4. So I mainly focus on the development and the design of user interface and also user experience. And I always love focusing and exploring the design which can break through the industry limits. So this basically is the introduction about myself. Yeah, thank you.
That's fantastic.
So I think we're gonna talk a ton about UI and everything like that, but I wanna know, what is your story? How did you end up going to the EAE program and how did you end up being interested in developing games as a career?
So for my undergrad program, I started in computer science. You know, most of the game engineers, you know, it's like the same story. They start with the computer science. But for me at first, like I didn't have quite interest in computer science. It's kind of like, it's about something about technology, but I didn't have the goal. I'm trying to find the goal. But when I realized, you know, there is a game industry. And for EAE, the EAE for me is like the combination with art and engineering. It's like a perfect match. You know, it's not just about art. It's not just about, you know, the technology. It's about how we combine together. And the output is game, which is, I love video games since I was a kid. And also I think, okay, this is a path I can just move forward, and this is something I feel okay. Something I really like, and really I can, you know, use my passion. So this is why, like, I starting applying to EAE, and I only apply this game major just for this for Utah. This is the only thing. For rest of that, it's just computer science.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like, so when I just know I got the offer from EAE and for, you know, the rest of the offer about computer science, I just say, okay, no, I want to make the game. So,
you know, I'm always so impressed with people who want to go to school in a country that's different than where they're from, or, you know, and trying to do something as hard as graduate school in not your native language. I think it's so difficult. And I'm always just so impressed with our students who actually do well, you know, and you just did so well. I'm getting all like verklempt thinking about it.
Save it, Corinne. Thank you. We have a whole podcast.
I know.
So
thank you. Did you have any
experience with like computer science or programming before you started your undergrad? Like, did you take classes in high school or anything like that?
No, I didn't.
So your very first exposure to like coding in general was in college?
Right.
Oh, wow.
That's actually hard.
Well, and that's really good to hear though, because a lot of like the younger undergrads, not a lot, but some of the younger undergrads will come up to me and they'll be worried. They'll say, I haven't been programming since I was 12. Am I already too late? Like, is it too late to join the game because everybody else has already been programming since they were a kid?
No, so I know this, like right now for younger generation, this is kind of like a pressure, because I know now, you know, with all the resources from the internet, it seems to be pretty easy if you want to just surf self-learning the computer science is pretty easy. So you will see a lot of just children with young age, they get to the programming at a really young age. It's not like something we used to be. But I think the thing is about the game, there will be always, for me, there are two paths you can choose. One path is always about creativity. No matter you starting about the art or it's about engineering or it's just about the design itself, you mostly you focus on its output, its game product itself. At some point, and so the limitation will not just come from the technology, it's from the programming. It's more about how you can come up with idea, how you can, push the idea into something you can play with, how you can work with a group of people together to make the thing happen. That's actually, I think, is the most difficult thing. Normally, for people want to follow this direction, that we end up with something like creative director, the lead design of the game, no matter which background you have, right? So, but another path, maybe for that path, the second one, yeah, it's true, you might have pressure, which is you just focus on the game technology, right? And you want to create a new game engine or, focus on the game graphic. And for that, that would lead you to something like the principal engineer, the lead engineer. That is a path maybe if I didn't have the chance to start programming at a young age, that could be the pressure for you. Mm-hmm. But eventually, if you want to make the game, there's no, excuse. If you want to do, you can do it now. It's never too late, but just don't let the pressure beat you before you start doing anything.
Yeah. Really, really good advice.
I think it's interesting. I think that we never tell anyone that they have to have been doing this forever, right? Because mm-hmm. you can work really hard. We've talked to people on our podcast that got into their undergrad and had never, obviously, now we have another person that had never done a lot of programming. The only caveat to that is I think art, it does help you if you have been drawing since you were a little kid.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But that's if you want to be a concept artist, but we've had,
no one's been modeling since they were a kid.
No, think there are probably kids now that have, but I guess we'll find out what happens, but I think
10 years.
Application of interest makes a huge difference, right? It just makes a huge difference. So, yeah. I think I remember Jason Conagratnam, who was a C3. You might remember him. He was on, oh my gosh. He was on a game. I can't remember the name all of a sudden. Anyway, he did not program until he got to grad school.
Yeah.
So, he'd had a little tiny bit and that was it. So it just, if you work hard, things can happen for you. So, yeah. I knew you had a computer science degree.
So yeah.
How did you decide you wanted to come to the United States in general? You could have gone to a computer science school in China.
Mm-hmm. But I would like to make the game instead of, just be a general engineer. And so at the time when I decided to, travel overseas, go to United States, University of Utah had the best game major, in United States. And that's something I feel that is a pretty, it's like a chance I didn't want to miss. And also for me, traveling overseas is challengeable, but that's never something that would stop me
mm-hmm.
doing this thing. So this is why I make the decision pretty quick. It's not I need to take a long time to make the decision. I actually make that pretty short. And yeah.
I think sometimes that's the best way to make decisions.
Yeah, you know, you have the feeling, you know, that is something you want. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Well, and I say props to you for that. I would be terrified about the idea of going to school overseas to a place like that. Even I'm way beyond school at this point, and that idea still gives me like anxiety.
I think it helps when you're younger. You don't, you have That's less, fair. You know, less baggage with you.
You obviously never met me as a kid.
But yeah, but I think that is also true. At that point, you didn't know much. So kind of like in that way, you have more courage.
Well, yeah, you have no idea how hard it's going to be. I mean, I went away for grad school, and it was complicated because I had a full-time job here and I was trying to do that at the same time. Mm. And so I always felt like I had a lot in common with all of the people who came, you know, and it's really weird when you think about, like, we started this thing and drew people from all over the world to come and be in our program. And it makes us kind of like, we have to do our very best. We have to, you know, really be engaged. And I think that makes a big difference for our program, but yeah. Our students are also super engaged. I mean, we all feel like we're doing something kind of like we're sneaking through somehow, because we get to do game stuff for our jobs.
Yeah.
So, but you got a job almost instantly out of, you know, when you graduated.
Yeah, it's about before I graduate, I got the job, but right. It's just I started like to apply really early. So mm-hmm. it took a while, like when you finally get the job.
And so you had mentioned earlier that you started in more of the gameplay programming realm, and yeah. you've gone to UI now. How did that shift happen? Was UI something that you always wanted to pursue, or was it something you just kind of stumbled upon, or how did you make that move?
So that was a story. It's kind of like, I mean, you start with like a sad story. So something happened like in my first job, and because of the project, some NDA stuff I cannot tell more, but some bad thing happened to our first project. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I needed to change the job, and I didn't have much choice, like if you want to apply as a game engineer. So when I finally made the application, I got the offer. And at that point, like the second company which I worked later, and say at that point, the gameplay group kind of like full. And so, but we need like the UI engineer. So, but for me, I think at that point, it's like, I don't want like, just focus on gameplay. At that point, you know, I'm still young and I want to know more about the different parts of the game development. So I think why not, you know, for game UI, that's also one direction you should just know about it. But in turn to be like something like a happy ending, because then after I work as a UI engineer and I get to know more about UI, and then I do see the values from that. And that is something like I feel is still underestimate of the game industry. But as I like notice, there are more and more the UI UX position from the game industry. That is actually, I think, one improvement about like why this is getting more and more important. That's a sign, right? Like why the game, each game studio, they need more people who want, like, the people just focus on the UI particularly. And
yeah. I think a lot of the complaining that people do online is because of bad UI.
Right.
You know, I think companies are really starting to pay attention to, you know, I mean, the internet's a jerk. And so we're, you know, always kind of expect that. But you can solve a lot of problems if you pay attention to that user interface and user experience, for sure.
So yeah,
I agree with you. I'm seeing that as well.
Yeah, like I think the one of the things why people, you know, pay more attention to that is, so it's, think about like all the products. It's actually one funny story about the real user experience design that actually came from, I think, around the time since World War II. So at that point, you know, because of the war, there were a lot of new weapons made and mm-hmm. by the military. But at that point, a lot of weapon, like the way to use that was like a nightmare, especially mm-hmm. for like the airplane and, you know, all, you know, the panel, the buttons, all the stuff. Like people at that point, they still feel, okay, if this thing can work, okay, that should be enough. But it turned out to be because of a lot of like human error, and it caused, you know, the tragedy, like
right.
people lost life. And then like at that point, like the military brought brain scientists, like they start to, you know, do some research about how to improve that. And then it turned to be, okay, end up with, okay, this is something about user experience. And from that time until now, okay, this is like how, I mean, the modern user experience design, you know,
yep.
Move step by step to here.
Yep.
And now it's like this is move into the game industry. You know, as before, it's like, if you can play one game, it's already a good thing. Think about when you were a kid, like you can get one video game. Why you can't, you know, why you should complain anything about that, right?
Right.
You just
right.
play the game. Right, at that point, it's like, if you cannot like finish this game, it must be your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot figure out how to play this game. But now things are totally different. People have many choice. And also people like, because they know how to play like different type of game, like for shooting game, you know, RPG or, you know, any other game, like people already understand how to play that. So now how they want more improved experience, that would be about the user experience.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about user experience, why always seems like the UX and UI is kind of like, you know, a couple, you cannot, you know, make them separate. I think it first comes from the internet application, because you think about all the internet application, the main part is just about UI. So when you talk about user experience, that's mainly talk about like the UI design, but for game it's different. So user experience, like let's say it can contain many parts, like gameplay could also about user experience, not only about the UI design.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it took a while even for the game industry to figure out, okay, user experience, actually it can contain more areas of the game development. And so we should, you know, think about how to use the knowledge from the user experience to apply to not only for UI, but also you think about for the gameplay or mm-hmm. for, you know, any place in the game like player need to interact with. So there are also some really good topics recent year, like the lead UX designer from the Epic, there are mm-hmm. some like really good like talks like about how to use the brain science knowledge to make the UX design.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the World War II thing, because I don't remember where I heard this, but they were talking about how originally they had designed plane cockpits and actually just seats in fighter planes for an average body,
mm-hmm.
but no one is average. Like there is not a single person that actually can sit in a chair that is designed for an average person. Everybody's, their legs are longer or something, but they had just kind of thought, well, we'll just do the average. We'll take all the data from how tall people are and how heavy they are and how long their arms are and then make this average. And it caused so many crashes because people, like things were just not in the right places and they didn't make the seat adjustable. And so like cars used to not have adjustable seats. And
right.
so you know, it caused all kinds of problems. And interesting.
Right.
It's like, and hadn't really thought it in about the context of UX, but you're 100% right. It's like, you know, we are all so different, you know, we can design around that, you know?
Yeah. Yet I also think about the people, if the people have the disability.
Yes.
Like, right? Like that would be a nightmare. And mm-hmm. I know there are more and more games right now. They also, when they design the game, they will also consider about the people with disability. And some of the game in recent year, did a really good job, Last of Us Part 2, and people even with a virtual problem, they can still, play that. And
My husband always talks about, sorry, Adam, okay. You were about to talk. My husband always talks about games get too hard. Like he loves to play video games, but they are really hard. Even when you put them on easy mode, sometimes they're, and he's played video games as long as I have. And so he stops playing games because they just, the difficulty level gets so ramped up way too quick on some, a lot of games he likes, so.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, so with you being a UI programmer, do you have a lot of design or creative input into the UI team? Because I know that some programmers, based off of what they're doing, it's basically just like, give me the document, I will make the document work. Here you go, next. But with different UI teams that I've worked around and that I've spoken with, it often can be more of like a collaborative, it needs to be the three of us and we all need to figure this out. Even if it's an artist or a designer or an engineer, we all have to kind of work together. So how does that work in the position that you're in now?
Yeah, this is a good question because first, the team right now I'm working with is a pretty awesome team because I have the space if I want to create the design input. Mm-hmm. Even my basic job is as a game engineer. And so because the thing is so when you design a feature, the normal pipeline would be, the design makes a document to make sure this is all the requests, and then the engineer would, achieve all this, the requests and mm-hmm. to make the thing happen. So, but during the process, it could be sometimes the technology limitation might affect the design. So when the designer designs a feature, they might not have a clear idea about that limitation. So that needs the engineer feedback or the input to work with them together to figure out, okay, either you need to go beyond the limitation, as I just said, this is why I love always push the limits, or sometimes you have to compromise, right? And so within all the limitation, how you can still make a design, the output still match your goal, right? And so that's a first thing. Even I'm a game engineer, but for when I work with a designer, there are a lot of things like this and I need to work with them together. And the second thing is I always, for myself, I consider I'm an engineer, but also I'm a game designer. So the engineer is just like a tool to help me to achieve the goal. But the design, it's a design to decide what's the final, the goal or the experience the player could have. So within our team, if I have any ideas and proposal, and I would just, for instance, say I just write a one-page design documents and to let the people know about my idea, and they will take get the feedback, and also they will just consider if they think this is a good proposal. So they will approve if they really like it. They will not do anything okay, this is not part of your job, and so just take leave the design to us and you just work for the engineering part. So I think ideally I wish there are more the game teams would be like this, because I think just when I started in EAE, I remember at that point, everyone have a flexible role, right? Sometimes engineer could be the design, sometimes the design could do engineer or production work. It's all based on what's the need from the team and how you can contribute to the team. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you want to collect with other people, you do need to understand what other people do. For design, you should understand what's the area they mainly focus on. So to understand that, you should at least know the basic idea about what's the UI design, what's the UX design. Like I always say one thing to my team is I want engineer, design, artists, they can communicate in the same language. When I talk about the language, it's something like engineer has language, right? It's normally with some nerd words people feel, you know, that's one language, and artists have their language.
Absolutely.
Right? So all people from different tracks, they have different language, but I really want is that people can communicate in one language.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I can do is I move farther is I try to understand your language first. And then when I communicate with design artists, then we can find out, okay, this is like a, you know, appropriate way we can communicate with. Yeah.
It's so funny because everybody we talk to talks about how critical it is to learn how to communicate with people that do other stuff, you know?
Well, so I wanted to have a follow-up question to that regarding mm-hmm. UI specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So UI, obviously the user is, well, in all of games, the user is important and the player is important, but do you find that you are, a lot of your design and a lot of your implementation that your team does, mm-hmm. is it based a lot on player feedback, like running play tests and seeing what works or what doesn't, or is it more based on using like games or things that have come in the past? How do you get the feedback to know whether or not your UI is interfacing with the user properly or not?
This is also, it's a question people ask a lot. And so basically, if let's say if the feature is already has been done, and so to get the feedback, it's always we get like by A/B testing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just collect some data based on the player live action, and to you know prove if one feature works in the right way or not. But the question would be really is like how we can, before we get this done, how we can make the decision, say which direction we want to go and what's the feature we actually want. So as you said, a lot of time people will study based on the past experience, right? And based on maybe some other game products or based on like, you know, the previous game we worked with before. So that's like kind of like a normal way, but in recent years, I noticed there are more and more games, they kind of like, they break the limits. And so why? It's like, I think they jump out of the UI design. They just focus on, so what's like the final, like say the maybe emotion experience or, you know, just a gameplay experience. They focus on the final goal. And then like they will think about what would be the way we can try to make that happen. For example, like, so in a lot of games and we have the, like say the mini map system or like the map that shows the path to go to the, like say the target place, right? So normally like say, if we want to design a system like that, we will show, okay, let's make sure player can see the target place in the map. They can see the, you know, the path, they just follow the path. That's kind of like a typical design, right? But in the game, The Ghost of Tsushima, they break all the rules. So there was no path. So there was not like a clear target in the minimap. The way they use the wind. They use the bird as a guide.
Interesting.
So think about when you just like, you know, if you are playing this game and so you want to go one place,
mm-hmm.
your eyes, you don't need to move between the map and the gameplay area. You just see the wind because also in that game, the environment match with the design. There are a lot of plants, grass, flowers, trees. So it's easy, you can tell the direction of the wind. So then what you need to do is you follow the wind direction. And when you get close to the target place, and then you will see some maybe indication about, okay, this is a place you need to maybe interact with, or you need to, you know, investigate. So that's, I feel that is a good design. They mm-hmm. jump out of, you know, the typical way. Like the final goal is still leads a player to the target place. But what they want is how we can make the player kind of have like immersive experience yeah. without you change your focus between the UI and, you know, the real environment. They find a way to combine together. So it's hard to tell the wing is part of the UI or is, you know, it's actually still like a part of the 3D world, mm-hmm. but it doesn't matter. But in this case, the final goal is like they like achieve the final goal easily. So that's the thing I think like I do wish like board game and the game designer we can, you know, follow in this way. Mm-hmm. Because like when we think about like a feature we want to achieve, you should not just think about, okay, what's, you know, you don't think about the form first. You always think about the inner side, what's the goal first. Mm-hmm. And then you will find what's the best form to achieve that. Then we will talk about, okay, there might be some existing example we can take as reference, but there may be also some feature we can just, you know, do that from scratch and we just try something new. And because now with all the game, you know, the hardware device support, you can have more resources. So you have more space to explore different possibilities.
Right.
So this is, yeah, this is my, yeah, thought about this.
I have one more follow-up, Corinne. I'm so sorry. I just, I'm on this train of thought.
No, go for it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned when you do A-B testing, with UI specifically and UX, is a lot of the feedback you receive from that A-B testing, is it based more off of like you observing the tests and realizing like, oh, they're having a hard time figuring out where to go? Or do you rely more on people telling you like, I had a hard time at that specific point, or I didn't know what to, where my health was or anything? So I guess, is it more of a, do you get direct feedback from the players or do you get feedback by watching the players?
So for that part, like for my work, I haven't like worked with that part a lot, but just based on my experience. So you can say both. It will based on what's the stage of game development. Like if we want to get the direct feedback from the player, normally it's before the game ship. And so you get some, you know, the inner test. And so you can talk to people who test the game. You can get the feedback directly. And, but after the game that is online, that will be more based on maybe just the user data. Mm-hmm. Like you need to understand, analyze those data. This is why we need the data scientists. A lot of game studios, they hire data scientists because they collect all the live data from the player. But you, how you can understand all this data, you need data scientists. Then they can figure out, okay, for instance, say for one feature, we do the A-B testing. And when we get the, all the live data from the player, and then we will get the result, okay, which direction is better. Like for instance, for UI, normally some data, for example, is like how long the player stay in one menu. But that is a tricky part because this stay like in one menu if for a longer time, it could be they really like that menu or maybe they just cannot figure out how to, you know, how to find a certain place. So they just stuck in that menu. So that is really hard to tell. And you need the professional data scientist to understand, okay, what's, you know, it's a good result or bad result. And
I was at a party at GDC one year and was kind of like loitering. I don't even remember why, but there was a guy standing next to me and I just, because I'm a talker. So I started talking to him and he was in the data analysis team for Blizzard. And he was telling me about like, just like they track everything. And he's like, you know, when we first started, we tracked everything, but we didn't know the right questions to ask. And so it takes a long time to understand how to actually disentangle all that information from the data that they are collecting. So you're right. I mean, you have to be able to ask the right questions to get your question answered, you know, because which is better is complicated, right?
Yeah. And also also you need to know what data you want, and that's also really hard to do.
Yeah, and that takes a lot of programming to create the tools for internal developers to be able to get all the stuff. So that was an interesting conversation that I had 6 years ago or something like that. So
I have another question. I feel like I'm taking over. Corinne, I'm sorry. You ask.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I'm providing the color commentary today. It's fine. It's probably not very colorful though.
Well, I'm just curious. This is totally shifting gears, but I'm just curious. So you talked about how, you know, you played video games when you were a kid. You decided you had this kind of enlightening moment of like, hey, I can do a creative and an engineering side together and I can make games. And now you're at Infinity Ward, making some of the biggest well-known video games in the world. Is that
not the biggest?
It's not the biggest, right?
I mean, it's certainly the thing that everybody says, like when they say a video game name.
Yeah, exactly. And so is that something, I guess I have kind of a two-part question, which is one, did you ever think, like when you were in school or when you were thinking about wanting to be in games, did you ever think like, this is one day I'll make it to the big times. Like one day I'll really make it. And then two, the second part of the question is it weird? Like as you look around and you're like, wait a minute, I'm making these games that like millions and millions and millions of people are playing. Is that different from other experiences you've had? Or is it just like, nah, we're still just making a game and we're still just making it fun and life goes on.
Okay. So for the first question, it's of course, like I think everyone like who wants to work in game industry and everyone dreams really big. And so you really want like, say, be part of the team who make a really successful game, or even you want to make your own game. That is true. And I do think like all this motivation that would give you the energy to move forward. So that's certainly, I think like that's not like a problem for me, because that is, I always want, you know, have a big dream and just keep going. But for the second one, yeah, I sometimes like I have some feeling kind of sometimes it's not like weird, it's like surreal, you know, it's not like so it's because when you dream about some, you know, game company before you join that, you feel it's, you know, there is like a lie, you know, when you across that lie, it's all the magic land. And when you, you know, before you move in, it's, you have no idea like what's inside. But I think that's a process every game developer they will face. It's not like a bad thing. It's just think about the film like Saul, right? Like the jazz trumpeter who joined the dream band he wanted to join. And after the first night show, so as life still goes on, but that is not like a bad thing, because you reach at one point and you understand, okay, now you are part of this team and you make the successful game. And once you remove the part of the fancy part and you will understand what's actually the real game development, not like say the, so it will include the good thing and bad thing. But if you really want to make a good game, you have to know them first. Like for the good thing, that's a thing you want to keep. That's a thing that we encourage you to keep, move on. For the bad thing, that's something you need to fight with and you need to have the courage to, you know, face them. So the fancy part might block your vision, but once you remove that fancy part and then you say, oh, this is a real game, the life of the game development, that's not a bad thing. And I'm pretty sure like once you know all of this and you have the real fancy name, that's a fancy name is from the real life, but step by step, but you will know why that is really like fantastic, because you know this first and then you make the thing, the magic thing happen. And
yeah, that was so well said.
Thank you. That was awesome.
You're so right. Like, I mean, that's one of the funny things about working with people who are on their way to cross that line, you know, and no one when they're on that side thinks they're going to make it across. And then when everybody gets across, they're like, oh, this isn't that different. I still have to do all the work. I still have to be
fix the bug.
Yes, it's the same thing, but it's like that line feels like uncrossable, you know, when you're on that other side, and it's scary. It's so scary. And at this time of the year, you know, it's March. It's like everybody's starting to, like, we've got 5 or 6 weeks left of the semester. So we've got a whole bunch of kids that are about to graduate, and they're all just convinced that they're never going to get jobs, just like every year. People still get jobs, you know, and
they get jobs, it'll just be for some.
It's because of you, Adam.
Boring company. No, but that's what they think, right? Like, I'm not going to get a job, but if I do it, it'll never be for Infinity Ward, or it'll never be for Blizzard. It'll always just be for some mobile company.
I wish that people would stop worrying about where they go first, you know?
Yeah.
Because it is crossing that line. It's like the threshold, you know, it's like you get to go to that other place.
Well, and in more cases than Jingwee's, like, how many people have said that, like, oh yeah, it wasn't until years into my career when I discovered what I really wanted to do.
Right.
I started in something else, and then I changed this whole
thing. And accidentally, in a way, right?
Yeah. You know?
But I love that it's, you know, your design, desire to be a designer is being combined with your engineering now, you know, because you ended up in such a great place for that. So that's great. I'm so happy. I'm such a dork.
Thank you, Green. Yeah.
I'm fine. There's a lot of, every job has its, like, ugh, I hate this part, but, you know, one of the great things about what we're doing is we really are helping you get to do what you dreamed of doing, you know, but we say this all the time. It's like preparation meets opportunity. You know, you have to be prepared for that opportunity to come along for you to get, what did Karen say last week? He said it way better than I did.
Preparation is when opportunity, luck is what happens when.
Preparation and luck meet opportunity or something. I don't know. He said it way better than us.
Let's do this. Anyone listening, go back and listen to the Garen Richards episode, because he'll say it better than we can.
Who's also an UI engineer. So it's like we're having a nice string of UI here.
Well, and I love that, like, Jingwee, I love that your experience and, like, your insight into stuff has been different than, like, Garen's was. Like, because that shows that even if you're doing something that is as niche as, like, I'm a UI engineer, that's a pretty specialized thing. Mm. You still make it your own, and it's still like, no, this is my realm, and this is what I do, and this is what I take charge of. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think the people, we just sometimes, not sometimes, it's like maybe after a certain time, you need to redefine yourself. And like the title or like the tag you put on yourself, that will help you to become, you know, what the tag or title implies. But sometimes you need to redefine yourself. Like, so you are engineer, and if you want to redefine, and what would be the, you know, the next one you want to define yourself. But if you always just define by one word or one title, and that would, I think that would block your vision and make you, you know, kind of move farther. And
yeah, you're right. Yeah. Growth, I mean, it makes you not grow, you know? Because you aren't defined by a title at a company, you know?
Yeah.
You're a game developer. Maybe that's the only thing, right? But you're lots of other things too. We're all lots of other things besides our jobs, you know?
Yeah. So.
Okay. I think we have reached the stage. I can't believe how fast that went. It's rapid fire question time.
Corinne, since I did like most of the talking, I'm going to sit back, and this is all you. This is all, go for it. People are sick of hearing my voice.
No, so. I like hearing your voice. Okay. The voice is great, yeah. You ready for our rapid fire questions?
Okay. Yeah. This is the first time I do this, so.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's really easy. We're just going to ask you a bunch of questions, and you can, you don't have to answer. I mean.
Yeah. Short answer, like, kind of.
Sure, yeah. Whatever. Yeah. You know, yeah. I'm happy to spend time with you. Come on now. Okay. So. What is the first video game you remember playing?
First, Pac-Man.
Whoa.
Ooh, nice.
That's old school. Like, you're way too young for Pac-Man to be the first game to play. I thought you were going to say Call of Duty.
No.
what's the first game system that you ever owned?
Silent Hill 2.
Game system. Like
did, PlayStation, like a Nintendo it? Or?
Oh, Game Boy.
A Game Boy. Game
Boy? Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. What is your favorite video game of all time and why?
Grand Theft Auto St. Andreas. Yeah.
Ooh.
That's funny considering where you live now.
Yeah. This is why I live here. Yeah. For people who don't know, I'm in LA now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Come on. You're there for the tacos. Like, LA has amazing food, just amazing food down there.
Yeah.
So what is a video game from the past that you wish you could have worked on other than maybe Grand Theft Auto San Andreas? Is there a game that you wish you could have been a part of?
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, like the original?
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow. Well, you're pretty close. Mm-hmm. Adam, you have to ask the next question because I don't play that.
Well, who's your favorite Pokemon?
Pokemon, Pikachu.
See,
that's what I would say, because that's like the name a Pokemon, and I would say Pikachu.
Go with what works, man. Go with what works.
Bulbasaur. I know that one now too. Is that's a Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I sound like an idiot. Sorry.
No. It's you're not an idiot at all. It's one of the starter Pokemon from the first Pokemon game. So yeah. You are old there.
So if you owned a video game studio, what kind of game would you make?
Open world game.
An open world.
Yeah.
Very cool. What are you playing right now? Like, what games are you playing right now? Not right now. You're obviously interviewing right now.
I'm playing Pokemon Go on my phone.
Cyberpunk 2017.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Are you liking it?
I like it. I know a lot of people hate that, but...
I think they fix things.
But after finish that game, I really like it.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Have we talked about Witcher? Like, did you play The Witcher 3?
I played a little, but I didn't finish that yet.
Mm. Well, very different game, right? I mean, right. Same it's studio, different. Just very different game.
So. Corinne brings up The Witcher anytime she can.
Shut up, Adam.
Yeah, now I know, okay.
And then our final question is, if you could give advice to yourself in the past or, to anyone that's listening now that is about to get into the game industry, do you have any piece of advice for them or for you, young Jingwei?
So don't stay in comfort room and jump out and...
Don't stay in comfort. Mm-hmm.
I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. I just wish I could have more courage. I think I have some courage, but I wish I could have more for younger me. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Younger you got on a plane and came to a place called Utah, which you probably had never even heard of where that was before. You got to give yourself a little more credit, honey.
Okay.
Oh man, I wish I could hug you right now.
We have virtual hug, okay?
I have hugged you before, so
yeah,
I am a hugger. It's just I'm not gonna cry. I'm just so happy that you're working on something that you really are enjoying.
Yeah, that's
and awesome. That you live someplace that you like and and you're safe and you are. I mean, we're all working from home, so be safe. So
yeah. Yeah, the same, like everyone stay healthy and stay safe.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We're coming down to I had my first vaccination, so I'm super excited. Oh.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, so. That's good.
Yeah. So yeah, Utah just opened it up to anyone 16 and older. So hopefully you'll get it quick in LA. So yeah. you have a much bigger population down there. So
it's there's kind of a lot more millions and millions of people that they have to deal with.
But they did just open up Disneyland for California only residents.
I heard that.
So you could take a trip to Disneyland if you want to. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
Jingle. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Adam.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
And we'll have you back in the building to do a talk in the future for sure. We loved it when you came.
I would love to, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
We love to see you in person, so.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.